This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, as we do this episode of the PowerCast, Chris O'Brien is moving. It's moving day. And so, we know when it comes to exiting the old home and finding a new one, you're not given very much time. So, anyway, he's going to be busy. I did a move last year. And I'm still recovering, and I won't ask our guests about that. In the meantime, we've asked Kurt Collins once again to be our guest co-host. Kurt, welcome aboard. Thank you very much for doing this at the last minute.
Well, thank you. You know, you followed you again yesterday, and then you asked me back. So it's just, I guess we're just going to say I'm on pause now and then.
Yeah, well, you know, I know about quitting ufology. Mark O'Connell. Have you ever quit ufology, or have you been involved in the UFO field other than this book?
I've taken a leave of absence, which I guess counts as the same thing. I worked for about 5 years as a certified UFO field investigator for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. And about a year and a half ago, I took about a one-year leave of absence just so I could finish my book. Unfortunately, when I came back to MUFON after a year, a lot had changed. And I quit after only about a month. So
we've talked about that a little bit about MUFON, that there are a lot of things there going on that a lot of us do not like.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
Yeah, well, there's an article, I think Kevin Randall did it, about this inner circle they have there at MUFON, where if you give a donation of at least $5,000 a year, you become part of this special club. So I don't know about that. I understand that if someone generously donates to the organization, you want to honor them in some way. But it seems to me these people are getting some kind of special access, because this person who made the racist comments on Facebook is a member of that inner circle. And I don't know about you, unless it really affects their bottom line, I would send them away and hand them his money back, saying, you know what, we don't want your money.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I passed on the opportunity to sell my book on MUFON's online store for that very reason.
Well, we're not going to talk about MUFON, but we're going to talk about you as a person before we talk about a person I knew slightly. So, Mark, tell us something about your background. We know, of course, the MUFON connection, but what led you from wherever you were to there?
My fascination with UFOs and aliens in outer space started at a very, very young age. My first conscious memory, I swear to you, my first conscious memory was of a night in 1963. I was about three and a half years old, and a new TV show was premiering on ABC TV, and it was called The Outer Limits. And for some strange reason, my mom, who was never known to be a fantasist or big fan of science fiction, for some reason, my mom had that show on the TV on the night of its premiere episode. And when the alien appeared halfway through the episode, I was so terrified. It was this glowing radioactive humanoid alien. I was so terrified of that thing that I ran up the stairs and hid behind the corner of the stairway until the scary monster went away. And that's how it all started. Ever since that moment, I have just been absolutely fascinated with anything to do with space exploration, aliens, UFOs, you name it. Also, somewhere in there in my childhood, I recall having a recurring dream. Haven't had it for many, many years, but for a while there, it was a pretty regular thing where I would walk out onto the back steps of our house, and we had a very, very big backyard. And I remember I'd go out to the back steps of the house and look up in the sky, and the sky would just be choked with invading spaceships heading toward me or heading towards my family house. So those, I think, were the two big things that really started this fascination. And then when I was old enough to go to, you know, start reading and going to the library, my mom was a librarian at our local library, and she would take me in with her often when she worked. So here's this little, you know, young boy, I don't know, maybe 5, 6, 7 years old, and I'm kicking around the library for hours at a time, and I just gravitated toward the one bookshelf that had, you know, all the usual suspects, Brad Steiger, Eric Van Daniken, you know, all the books about the Bermuda Triangle, Bigfoot, Poltergeist, Loch Ness Monster, and, of course, UFOs. Those were the books I always went to and read over and over and over again. I'm pretty sure the first UFO book I read was Frank Edwards' UFO Serious Business. So that really cemented it. And then there was one more moment from my youth that I remember. This is when I was 13, and the news broke of the Pascagoula, Mississippi alien abduction with Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker. So up until this point, I had only been reading about UFOs in books at the library. And suddenly here was a real UFO case, a spectacular UFO case that was being talked about and reported on the nightly news for days and days and days. And I remember that having such a huge impression on me because it really impressed upon me. These aren't just stories in a book anymore. These are real events that are taking place involving real people who are dealing with real consequences of the experience. So that moment in 1973, when the Pascagoula case, you know, became headline news, I think was probably the final brick in putting together my massive love and fascination with all of these themes.
So very briefly here, and we all got started with UFOs when we were young. So Mark, what is your professional background? What was your day job, or what is your day job?
My current day job is I teach screenwriting at DePaul University in Chicago. And like most writers, I've had a whole variety of day jobs over the years. I'm proud to say that for almost the entirety of my adult career, and I'm 57 now, I've been able to support myself and my family with my writing. So it hasn't always been the kind of writing I was always excited to do, of course, but I was always writing. So that's what brought me here.
Right. Now, what we do find here is amongst your screenwriting work includes some Star Trek stuff.
Yes. When I first signed on with my first agent, which was in about 1990, Star Trek The Next Generation had been on the air for a couple of years and was becoming a pretty big hit. And the Star Trek producers had this very unusual policy, unusual for Hollywood. They had an open door policy. They would accept scripts from any writer, even if the writer didn't have any professional credits to his or her name. So because of that, I was able to write a spec script for The Next Generation, and my agent was able to submit it to them, and it got read. I mean, basically, it's guaranteed. Any script that crosses the desk of their producers will get read, and you will get feedback on it. So ultimately, I found out that they liked my script enough that they wanted me to come in and pitch stories for Next Generation. So made an appointment. Now, that I'm living in Wisconsin at the time, so I'm doing this all over the phone. Okay. So we set up an appointment for me to talk with one of the producers, a guy named Joe Manosky, and they give me the ground rules. I can pitch up to 4 different story ideas. The pitches should take about 10 minutes each. And you only get one chance because there's so many other people waiting in line that if you don't make a sale on that first pitch with those first 4 story ideas, you're done. So, okay. So I work up 4 story ideas for Next Generation, and I do the phone pitch with Joe Manosky, and all 4 of the stories go down in flames. And I'm sitting there at my kitchen table on the phone thinking, well, that's that. I have my chance, and it's done. But then Joe started saying some strange things. He started saying, okay, Mark, here's what I want you to try next time. I want you to tell this kind of story and this kind of story. And I cut him off. I said, wait, excuse me, what? I thought I only got one chance at this. And he said, well, those are the rules. Normally you only get one chance. But he said, I really like your story ideas, so I want you to come back and try again.
You know what? Well, we'll continue with how Mark O'Connell became a Star Trek scriptwriter before we get into his book, The Close Encounters Man, with Gene and with Kirk Collins. You're in
the Paracast.
also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
If you're a sleep apnea sufferer who's on the go to your phone. Because if you give us a call right now, you'll be able to try the world's first portable mini CPAP device absolutely risk-free for 10 restful nights. It's the Transcend Mini CPAP, an engineering marvel that's as small as a soda can and weighs less than a pound. Its unique design is so small and so light, you can fit it in your briefcase or purse to use anywhere you go. No more dragging around a big, bulky CPAP. Even better, now you can try Transcend absolutely risk-free for 10 restful nights by calling minicpap.com, 1-800-441-9833. Transcend is FAA compliant, too, so you can even sleep comfortably while flying. You can also add a battery pack that's as tiny as a deck of cards. So now you can enjoy the freedom to sleep comfortably anywhere. But don't wait. To receive your 10-night in-home trial, call minicpap.com now. 1-800-441-9833. That's 1-800-441-9833.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So we're back with Mark O'Connell, author of The Close Encounters Man, How One Man Made the World Believe in UFOs, that man being Dr. J. Allen Hynek. And listeners, I did get to meet him a few times and have a couple of stories to tell, and I'll do that later. So right now, of course, we're seeing how Mark became a Star Trek screenwriter. So the first four ideas, Mark, no go, but they liked you enough to give you, despite the rules to the contrary, another opportunity. What happened?
Well, I jumped at the opportunity, of course, because who wouldn't? And so I came back a few months later and pitched four more stories, and they all went down in flames. But they invited me back again. So we went through this cycle probably a half a dozen times over the course of the next, I believe, year and a half. I kept getting very frustrated, but they kept inviting me back and giving me advice on, you know, how to do better stories. And I thought, I'm the kind of person who, if you invite me back, I'm going to come back. I'm going to take you up on that and make you regret it. So I just kept coming back and pitching. And then finally one day I pitched the right idea to the right producer on the right day. And about 2 weeks after my pitch, the producer, Brandon Braga, called me up and said, "Hey, Mark, we really want to use one of your new story ideas." He said, "Here's the problem. We just had our script for this week's episode thrown in the trash by our executive producer. So we have to shoot a show in 2 days. It has to be done in 8 days, and we don't have a script." So he said, "We really want to buy the idea behind one of your stories. Unfortunately, because time is so short, we can't hire you to write the script. We can only buy the concept from you." So what was I going to say? Of course I agreed. So they essentially bought one sentence from me, and then they went ahead and wrote the script and aired the episode. And at the time, Brandon said, "You know, if you play ball with us on this, you know, you'll get another shot at doing an episode." And sure enough, 6 weeks later, I made my first sale to Deep Space Nine. So the remainder of my episodes were all written for Deep Space Nine.
Okay, so the first episode that you did more than one line, which one was that?
That was the second season Deep Space Nine episode called Second Sight. It was the first love story for Commander Sisko on the space station Deep Space Nine. Next Generation episode where they bought my story concept, that was called Timescape. And unfortunately, because they simply bought one sentence, the Writers Guild doesn't have a category for selling one sentence. So even though I was paid very well for that one sentence, I didn't get my name on the screen. I didn't get a screen credit for that Next Generation episode. But I did for all the Deep Space Nine episodes. So it all worked out pretty nicely.
How many episodes of Deep Space Nine did you do?
I wrote four episodes of Deep Space Nine. Some of them I wrote the story and script for. One I did the script but not the story, and the fourth I did the story but not the script. So each one sort of developed in its own way.
So beyond that, where did you go after Deep Space Nine?
Well, I pitched a few times to the new Star Trek show Voyager, but that was an exercise in pure frustration. Voyager never quite knew what it wanted to be, and it was just impossible to pitch stories to them. Because every time I would talk to the producers, they would be in a completely different space than they had been the time before. And they were looking for completely different stories than they thought they were looking for. So Voyager was kind of a dead end. Had a couple other interesting opportunities in L.A., but decided to focus at that point on feature scripts for theatrical movies. And my agent was all in favor of that. So from about 2000 to about 2008, when the big writer's strike changed the whole industry, I just wrote movie scripts and had several of those move forward with production companies. A couple of them were optioned. A couple of my scripts were put in development. None of them was produced, sorry to say, but I was getting enough interest to keep up some momentum in my career, and that's, you know, that counts for a lot.
Okay, the writer's strike, how did that change things? Close down some opportunities for writers?
Well, because the strike lasted a while, all of the networks shut down production of scripted shows, and they all started airing reality TV shows. So even though technically we members of the Writers Guild technically won the strike, we got what we wanted out of the strike, but the unintended consequence was that the entire TV industry changed. And as I said, the networks all started buying reality shows. So all of us writers who had just gotten these new gains in, you know, our basic pay and our benefits, we're suddenly finding that there were very few actual writing opportunities anymore. So that's kind of what changed all of that. So from about 2008 on, I really wasn't working on anything of a whole lot of interest until I hit upon the idea of writing my UFO blog, High Strangest. And that's how this whole book thing came about.
Now, Dr. Hynek, you know, died a number of years ago. How did the idea of doing a bio of him come about?
It really just fell in my lap. I was in the right place at the right time. I had been writing a UFO blog called High Strangeness, which was, you know, kind of partly serious, partly tongue-in-cheek. I saw a lot of things in UFO culture that were that were a little silly and I thought deserved to be poked fun at. So I would do that in my blog regularly, and I still do. But when you start writing a blog, you have this unending need for new material. So I spent a lot of time online just first of all, going to my bookshelf and rereading all my old UFO books, and then just doing endless online research into UFO topics and what was currently happening in the UFO field. And in the course of that, I discovered that the Dr. J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies was still in existence, and it was just a couple of miles from where I was then living in Chicago in the northwest suburbs. So I contacted Mark Rodiger, who's now the scientific director of CUFOS, and asked if I could come visit and just sort of poke around in their files. And he agreed to that. So that started a long series of visits in which I would just sort of randomly look through all of their fascinating files and records and look for ideas for things to write about in my blog. And after a couple of these visits, Mark and I got to know each other a little bit, and he read my blog and seemed to find it entertaining. So on one of these visits, he said, you know, he just sort of casually mentioned, you know, we've always wanted to find a writer to write the definitive account of Dr. Hynek's career. And I said, oh, please pick me. I would love to do that. So he was agreeable. So he said, okay, well, you have access to all the files. Have at it. So at that point, I really started digging through the archives of CUFOS and found that. So Mark Rodiger has about half of the files in his basement, and then one of the other CUFOS officers, Mary Kastner, has all of the case report files in her basement and in her attic. So the CUFOS that Allen Hynek founded in the 1970s, there's not much of it left. It's a bunch of beat-up old file cabinets and bookshelves filled with books. And the people who are the keepers of the flame, Mark Rodiger and Mary Kastner and the other CUFOS volunteers, you know, they're all very great, very dedicated people, but there's just no money to really put those files somewhere where they can be preserved for all time. And that's kind of a shame. But that's another story. But now you know how the book came to be. It was basically I was in the right place at the right time.
So in doing research of a book like this, do you go back to Dr. Hynek's family, or do you basically fill in the details about what he did first?
Well, initially the book was just going to be about his career, and actually his two careers, his career as an astronomer and an educator, and his second career as a UFO expert.
Let's do our break here and we'll continue.
Okay.
Mark O'Connell with Gene and Kirk, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
The answer to being in control of your own health care is freedom from insurance. Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I'm here to tell you about GCNTelecare.com, a team of board-certified doctors assisting you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Within 15 minutes of registration, care your family can afford. Revolutionizing the healthcare industry, virtual consulting providing diagnosis of non-emergency medical issues by phone or secure video on computer or smart mobile devices. GCNTelecare.com, virtual care anywhere.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems system today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-765-9681 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-765-9681. Again, that's 800-765-9681.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of My Pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Kurt Sutton, the author of UFO Mysteries, and you're listening to the Paracast.
Mark O'Connell telling us how he came to write the book, The Close Encounters Man, about Dr. Hynek. So you were putting things together here and assembling the information you're going to use. Go ahead, please.
Initially, the book was just going to concentrate on Dr. Hynek's dual careers as an astronomer and as a UFO expert. Over time, though, as I started to learn more about who he was as a person, that sort of opened up the story to getting into more of his personal life, his family life. And early on, people had told me that Dr. Hynek's children probably wouldn't want to talk to me because they just weren't interested in talking about their dad's UFO work. But I thought, well, I don't really buy that. So I went after it anyway. And I ended up making contact with Paul Hynek, who's the fourth of Dr. Hynek's five children. And Paul was very agreeable to doing an interview, and he said, my family will be very supportive of this. We're all easy to get along with, and we all love to be part of this. So interviewed Paul several times, and then he became an ongoing resource. Anytime a question came up about their family life or personal details about his dad, Paul was always really receptive to my questions and always really great about giving me extra information. So he became a huge, huge asset. So with Paul's input, I was able to flesh out a lot of Dr. Hynek's personal life. I also started visiting the archives at the University of Chicago, where Dr. Hynek went to college in the early 1930s. There was a wealth of information there about his early career and his education. But then I also spent massive amounts of time in the basement of the Deering Library at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, which is where Dr. Hynek taught from 1960 to about 1984. And he was chair of the astronomy department for much of that time. The material at the Northwestern archives was just a gold mine. It was in those archives that I really filled in all the details of Hynek's career as an astronomer and really started to learn how his astronomy work meshed with his UFO work in these really fascinating and unexpected ways.
Over his history, forgetting about the UFO thing, did he have any notable achievements as a scientist?
Yeah, he did. And they're not the kind of things that make big headlines or get you a statue built in your honor. But he definitely made some significant contributions to astronomy. And really beyond astronomy, his specialty was studying the light emitted by stars. He was fascinated by examining the chemical content of the light. It was using spectroscopy to study the chemical content of starlight. And because of that, he was intensely familiar with the spectrum, of light. And this became a factor in World War II when he was honeymooning after his second marriage in Washington, D.C. He got sort of snared into the war effort in 1941 and put to work at Johns Hopkins working on this, the world's first smart weapon, something called the proximity fuse. And what this was a little radio device that could be put in the nose cone of a warhead. It would send out radio waves in advance of the warhead. And when the waves would bounce back from the target, this device would cause the warhead to explode, not when it hit the target, but when it got within a certain proximity to the target. So this saved a whole lot of our gunners during the war because they no longer had to hit a bullseye every time. And unfortunately, these fuses also ended up being in the nose cones of the two atomic bombs that we dropped on Japan. And Hynek was involved in the work developing that technology. So it became kind of interesting to me that his fascination with starlight and unusual kinds of starlight led him down these different paths. It also led him down the path of studying why stars twinkle, which is one of my favorite parts of his career. He was actually under contract to the Air Force to determine what causes stars to twinkle and to determine how you can tell the difference between a light in the sky that is actually moving or a light that is simply twinkling. And you can understand why the Air Force would want to know this, because it would be very valuable for pilots at night in war situations who see strange lights, you know, out in front of their aircraft, I'll say unfamiliar lights. It would be very valuable for a pilot to be able to tell the difference between a star that's twinkling and an artificially lighted object that's actually in motion and could be a threat. So these were all these different facets of research that Hynek got into just because of his fascination with the spectrum. I found all of this stuff just endlessly fascinating.
Just how did Hynek become part of the Air Force's UFO investigations?
He liked to say that he was an innocent bystander. He was teaching in the late 1940s at he had a position where he was teaching both at the Ohio State University and at Ohio Wesleyan University. At the same time, in 1947, as many of us know, that is when the modern era of UFOs began, because on June 24th, 1947, a private pilot named Kenneth Arnold was flying through the Cascade Peaks in the Pacific Northwest, and he spotted a chain of nine silvery semicircular objects zipping through the sky at an astonishing speed, which he later estimated as 1,200 miles an hour. And that sort of triggered this onslaught of UFO reports in the summer of 1947. And they were all being sent to the Air Force. And the Air Force had no idea what to do with these UFO reports. This was something completely outside their wheelhouse. And yet, it was something they absolutely had to deal with, because the Air Force's one and only job is to keep our airspace safe, right? And now here there are these strange objects penetrating our airspace indiscriminately over and over and over, basically on a daily basis all over the country, being seen by all kinds of people. And the Air Force has absolutely no clue. So they're desperate to explain these sightings away, and they're trying to explain as many of them away as they can as misidentifications of man-made objects, such as airplanes or balloons, but also misidentifications of celestial objects, like comets or the planet Venus.
Okay, the key being here, Mark, is that they had no incentive to look for a real UFO if there was one. It is, let's get rid of this stuff now and let's just find ways to do it.
Absolutely. Let's get rid of it as quickly as we can. So they discover that there's this astronomer right up the road who has already had top secret security clearance, so he can be put to work with a minimum of red tape. And so they approach Hynek at his university and say, hey, have you ever heard of these flying saucer things? And at the time, Hynek just took it as a joke. He thought, yeah, that's just a fad. It's going to, you know, it's going to die out pretty quickly. Well, the Air Force folks offer him a contract. They say, we would like to hire you to go over our stack of UFO reports and tell us which ones, in your opinion, are actually misidentifications of just plain old celestial objects. And Hynek quickly agrees because, number one, it's going to be easy money. And number two, he thinks he's going to promote good science because he thinks the whole UFO thing is just kind of an aberration. He thinks Americans are just jumpy about Pearl Harbor and they're paranoid that we're going to be attacked again. And so they're just seeing things that aren't there in the sky. So he jumps on this opportunity and he goes through all of these initial reports and he's able to write about 80% of them off as misidentifications of perfectly normal things, most of them astronomical objects. And that leaves 20% that can't be explained. Well, Hynek just sort of brushes those off and he says, well, given enough time and resources, we could probably explain the remaining 20% just as well. So the 20% didn't bother him at all. So he finishes his contract after a couple months and then just returns to academia, returns to teaching his astronomy classes, and forgets all about the UFO problem. Unfortunately, the UFO problem didn't go away, and it came back into Hynek's life three years later. The Air Force came back. Now their study group was called Project Blue Book. That's the one most people are familiar with. And the director, the project chief of Project Blue Book, a guy named Edward Ruppelt, Captain Edward Ruppelt, goes to Ohio State to visit with Hynek and says, hey, we're still having problems with these UFOs. Would you come back on board?
Oh, that could be the famous last words, but we'll get into more of that.
All right.
Mark O'Connell about the Close Encounters Man. Kurt Collins is our guest co-host this week. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you, too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX, or my website, danpilla.com.
Is that Ellen painting her garage?
Yesterday she was trimming her hedges.
What's her secret?
I heard she was eating this new superberry called the Aronia berry.
Aronia? What?
Aronia berries from superberries.com. They're known for having one of the highest levels of antioxidants that helps with overall wellness.
Where can we get them?
Go to superberries.com/radio. And right now we get a free smoothie recipe book with our order. Plus we can save $4 at checkout.
I can't wait. I've got lots of projects I need to get done.
Yes, you do.
Choose health. Eat purple. Superberries.com.
We use
use cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.
Hi, this is Ron Paul, former congressman and Republican presidential candidate. I love these summer months because this is when I get to enjoy the fresh fruits and vegetables that are being harvested on small farms and in our backyards. We all look forward to garden tomatoes and corn on the cob. Don't you wish there was a better way to preserve their true tastes and flavors? I'm here to tell you that there is a better way. It's by using the amazing home freeze dryer from Harvest Right. I have a Harvest Right freeze dryer and use it to preserve the foods I love. Strawberries, apples, and even lasagna and ice cream can stay fresh for 25 years. And the best part of my freeze drying is my family and I have a supply of long-lasting food on hand. So no matter what may come, we feel better prepared. We love our freeze dryer. To learn more, go to HarvestRight.com or call 800-923-9591. That's HarvestRight.com or 800-923-9591.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Yes, you're a professional, Mark O'Connell.
And thank you.
That's what Alejandro Rojas told me. He said, absolutely, this guy knows what to do. We're talking about the Close Encounters man. We're talking about the fact that Captain Edward Ruppelt, who was head of Project Blue Book, and he wrote a UFO book called The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects and is credited with inventing the term UFO because they want something that isn't flying saucer. He went and talked with Dr. Hynek to get him pulled back into the UFO mess. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, Hynek had been out of the UFO biz for about 3 years, and he had essentially forgotten about it. He had assumed that it was just a fad and it would just fade away in time. So out of the blue, Edward Ruppelt shows up at his office and says, hey, can I ask you to look at this old file from back when you worked for us before? And that was the Thomas Mantell case in which an Air National Guard pilot crashed and died pursuing what was thought to be a spaceship at the time. So Hynek goes over his records, and he does an amazing thing. Initially, when Hynek looked at that report, he said, oh, yeah, the pilot was obviously mistakenly chasing the planet Venus. That's what caused him to crash. Well, 3 years later, Hynek looks over that same case report, his own case notes, and he says, you know what? I was wrong. I don't think he was chasing Venus. Well, it turned out he was most likely chasing an experimental test balloon. So it still wasn't an extraterrestrial spacecraft, but it was different enough that Hynek had to admit, hey, I'd been wrong in my judgment. So that was kind of the first chink in his skeptical armor, was he had to admit that he had been wrong about one of the earliest cases. Well, what happens is, so Ruppelt comes to him and says, hey, I'm really impressed with your work. We're still dealing with this UFO issue. Would you please come back and work with us again? Can we put you under contract to Project Blue Book? And at this point, Hynek is absolutely dumbfounded. He's thinking, wait a minute, 3 years have passed, and the UFO fad has not faded away. In fact, it's gotten even stronger. And not only that, but there still remain, year after year, 20%, this residue of 20% of the cases that can't be explained. And that was when Hynek's thinking started to change. Up until that moment, he had been an absolute skeptic. He thought the whole thing was ridiculous. And all of a sudden, he starts thinking, wait a minute, maybe there is something real going on here, and maybe we need to start paying closer attention to those 20% unexplained reports. So that's kind of a big moment in Hynek's career when he starts to change his mind. it would take many, many years for him to go through the entire process of changing his mind, but we know that that's where the process began.
Now, thing to point out with Captain Ruppelt, unlike many of the people who got stuck with being in Project Blue Book, he seemed to be a pretty serious guy. From that book, he was inclined to take the subject very, very seriously. And I don't know if you ever looked into this, except for one thing. He did a revision of that book before he died. And he died like he was in his late 30s of a heart condition. But somewhat before that, he added three chapters to this book where he basically undid everything he did in the previous part of the book, saying he never believed in UFOs for a minute. And I don't know if you heard of the blowback at the time that maybe he was under pressure to do that. Just adding that aside as we go back to Dr. Hynek.
Yeah, I tend to trust Ruppelt's first version of the book. I think it's the first version of the book that was telling the true story. And I agree that the second version, the second edition, those revisions were caused by external pressure. He was no longer in the Air Force, but he was still under pressure from the Air Force to change his verdict, I guess. So, yeah, that's an interesting little side note to the whole story. The thing that impresses me most about Captain Ruppelt was when he was brought in to head Project Blue Book, he instituted a new policy where anyone on his staff who exhibited any tendency or bias towards an extraterrestrial theory would immediately be transferred out. But at the same time, anybody on staff who exhibited any bias towards a natural earthly theory for UFOs would also be transferred out. Ruppelt made absolutely sure that the people on his staff on Project Blue Book were as unbiased as they could possibly be. He didn't want anyone on his staff coming in with preconceived notions of what a UFO could be or couldn't be. And that demands huge respect. That was a very difficult and courageous thing for, you know, an Air Force functionary to do in that position.
Well, that shows, I think, a lot of intellectual honesty.
Yeah.
And of course, we have other stories about Ruppelt where he wrote something in his book about the Maury Island case, where he called it the worst hoax in history. And he said something about the Chicago publisher, that's Ray Palmer, who was the original co-founder of Fate magazine, that Palmer was responsible for it. And so that started a real brouhaha. But we won't get into that. Okay, so the 20% factor is what led Dr. Hynek to believe that this needs more attention, right?
Right. And then a sequence of events immediately after that sort of cemented that. Very soon after he was called back to Project Blue Book, he was sent out on this clandestine mission to interview his fellow professional astronomers to find out if any of them believed UFOs were real and if any of them had actually seen any UFOs. So Hynek spends a couple weeks journeying across the country, visiting all these different observatories and chatting with all of his friends and colleagues in the business. And in every conversation, he sort of slyly works in the topic of UFOs. Say, what do you think of this whole UFO business? You know, have you ever seen one? Do you know anyone who's seen one? And what he finds is he interviews about 45 astronomers, and he finds that about 10% of them have seen UFOs. And the funny thing is they won't talk about it in public, but when it's just one-on-one with Hynek, they're all very open to discussing what they've seen. So that's a pretty high percentage in such a close group of people who have seen a UFO. I mean, it makes sense with astronomers, right? They're always looking up at the sky. And they know exactly what belongs in the sky and exactly what does not belong in the sky. So those numbers were pretty interesting. And they were also very convincing to Hynek that, okay, maybe it is okay to talk openly about UFOs. His thinking had changed about UFOs, but he hadn't quite gone public with his thinking. So being able to survey these astronomers on the sly sort of gave him some intellectual cover. You know, once he knew that there was a significant percentage of his colleagues who had seen these things, he felt more comfortable talking about them in public himself. So that was an additional sort of inching forward movement for Hynek. But then the next thing that happened was he was actually sent out at the time Ruppelt's time with Blue Book came to an end. He recommended that Hynek be sent out to investigate a sighting in the field. Now, this was a first for Hynek. Up until this point, his only connection with these UFO reports had been, you know, reading through stacks of papers on his desk. And all of a sudden, it didn't happen until 1953, but Hynek gets sent out to South Dakota and North Dakota to investigate this very strange and difficult to explain sighting that involved a whole lot of Air Force people with very good reputations. So Hynek gets sent out in the field, and so for the first time ever, he's actually interfacing with UFO witnesses. He's actually hearing their stories firsthand, so he's able to hear the emotion in their voices. He's able to read their body language and their facial expressions. You know, so suddenly Hynek is aware of the human factor in a UFO case. And that changes his thinking as well. He starts realizing that there's so much more to these cases than what you'll just have written down on a piece of paper in a Project Blue Book file. When you actually talk to the people involved, you learn so much more about what the experience was really like. And in this case, in South Dakota and North Dakota, it went both ways. He was able to form much clearer opinions of which witnesses were reliable and which witnesses he thought weren't reliable. Again, because he was able to talk to them face to face and get the real meat of the story in person. So those were the things that really started moving Hynek along this path where he started to reconsider his position that all UFOs could be explained away as natural events.
Well, I think some of the things you've mentioned there are really important, and a lot of people are under the impression that Hynek's shift to away from skepticism began in the 60s, but I had a quote here. This is in preparing his notes for Edward Ruppelt had kind of done profiles on some of the people, and he said, Dr. Hynek has been a consultant astronomer to Project Sign, Grudge, and Blue Book. I won't say he's a believer, but he's darn interested. He has devoted a great deal of his valuable time to the project. So, you know, he definitely was expressing his respect for Hynek's scientific curiosity. And you know, this just goes into what you were saying, that this was an evolving position by Hynek based on what he was experiencing.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it exactly, an evolving position.
We'll have more of this, more of Dr. Hynek's long period of transition from UFO skeptic to accepting that something real is going on in a moment with Mark O'Connell and Gene Steinberg and Kurt Collins. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Are you looking to become more self-sufficient? Then you need to have your own energy source. The Solark EMP hardened generator is automatic, maintenance-free, and reduces your monthly electric bill. You can also take it off-grid when you go camping. Contact PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875 today. Portable Solar LLC gives you everything you need to start using solar energy in less than 1 hour. Solark EMP hardened solar generator energy insurance for your family or business. Call Portable Solar LLC today.
If there's a toxic chemical, biological, gas smoke emergency while traveling at home or on your job, are you protected? Are you prepared? There are over 400,000 fires in the USA every year. Up to 85% of all deaths in a fire are due to smoke inhalation. 3 minutes without air and we as humans will die. Be prepared and escape safely with our Safe Escape smoke hoods, giving you up to 60 minutes of breathable air protection. Order yours online at ase-safety.com. That's ase-safety.com. And get up to 40% off plus free shipping.